Welcome to Queer Tools. Today's topic, part 5 of our series on Bad Boss Number 1, The Angry and Demeaning Boss. Yep, it's been a long one, but we're at the end. Here we go.
Okay, so we just want to set everybody where we are in the cast. This is one of our special longer casts, part of a series on bad bosses. This cast is about how to be effective in your career working for an angry or demeaning boss. We laid out the basics of bad bosses. We don't try to manage them, and we don't want them driving us to make a career decision on short notice, so we need to be effective working for them. This particular cast is about that angry, demeaning, loud, disrespectful, rude, unprofessional, immature, bad boss. And we've got 3 recommendations: coping, performing, and deciding. We covered coping earlier. We're in the middle of discussing performing now. We've talked about responding to what the boss needs and what she wants, as well as talking about speed and quality, and then communication, communicating in her language. And I think now we're going to the idea of moving quickly. Don't wait, and deciding and acting, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of folks fall into the trap. Again, they have this angry, demeaning boss that asserts her power all the time. And then so they take this kind of wait and see attitude. And instead of deciding and acting, they sit and ponder.
Yeah, it's the coping thing, right? It's I'm going to cope. I'm going to shrink. I'm going to wait. Look, I would rather not get in trouble than do something and get in trouble. But people get paralyzed, right? And so they just want to kind of squeak by.
Right. If you feel like whenever you do something, you get in trouble, then why not just hide more, do less? And
yeah, the problem is waiting or avoiding conflict only makes it worse with angry or demeaning bosses. They will still yell, but now they have 2 things to yell about: you and your work, plus the delay of you trying to stay out of the spotlight. Look, they tend to run hotter and faster than other people. Maybe their heartbeats are faster, but they pump less compassion per minute or per gallon. So they want things faster, usually. Most of us are going to have to act faster, even if it feels uncomfortable. Don't worry about feeling uncomfortable that you're moving too quickly, because they will probably still be moving more quickly than you. And I suspect that the phrase ready, fire, aim might have been coined by a direct of an angry boss. We're not letting you off the hook for quality. We're simply saying what they respect or what they will tend to disrespect less is moving quickly and taking action. If you don't know what to do, come up with a plan on the fly and do some things and then report on what you did and what worked and what didn't work. Otherwise, they're going to fault you not only for not having anything done, but for delaying as well.
Okay, but you got to address for me what seems to me problematic. I'm just thinking that with an angry, demeaning boss, somebody who's willing to assert power here, the idea of deciding and not waiting and moving forward seems just fraught with risk. And under these conditions, I want to decrease risk, not increase risk.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm sorry. Is this cast the risk reduction tools cast? I'm sorry. Yeah. Look, working for an angry, demeaning boss is by definition inherently more risky than working for a non-angry, non-demeaning boss. We can't make the risk go away. We can make it clear, and we can't help you choose. There is risk. And the angry boss would say to us regarding the risk, why wait? Because waiting increases the risk. We're not saying that by acting fast, and sometimes even sloppily probably, that we eliminate risk. We're saying that of all the risks we're going to face with an angry boss, action risk is less dangerous to you and your career than delay risk or quality risk or relationship risk. Okay? We can't eliminate the risk, but we can tell you which risk over time will be the least dangerous. And that's action risk. Yes, when you take an action, you run the risk of being wrong. If you don't plan enough, right? Ready, aim, some people would say. If you don't plan enough, you increase the chances that your action is going to be wasted or inefficient or ineffective or all 3 of those things. Yes, it's true. Just like if you wait a long time, you increase the chances that you miss the opportunity. Or if you don't reach out to certain people, you may degrade the relationship. Or if you are selfish, you're going to create decaying relationships, which you won't be able to turn to later. All those things are true. At this point, because of the pressure you're under, because you work for an angry, demeaning boss who has power over you and can implement it to the detriment of your career, the question is, which of those risks are you going to choose? And the risk to choose is action risk. Angry and demeaning boss would it's better to get in trouble from them for doing things than it is for doing nothing, or for delaying, or perhaps shooting for more quality later. You would rather be punished for doing something and being wrong than for waiting.
Good. Okay, so now we've coped. We're staying quiet and frosty.
Right.
We're delivering results, even though there's risk there. We're still
right. There is risk. Results. We're not making that go away.
Okay. So what do we do now? What's next?
Yeah. Look, our last recommendation is to make a good career decision about the value of working for this angry boss. And I think actually I may have said some things that caused people to, I misled some people indirectly or because I said, look, you don't have time to work for a bad boss. Just quit. Just get out of there. But usually when I respond that way, it's because somebody has described a situation that's so egregious. I don't believe there's any doubt that coping is, you know, I hope they've been coping. I hope they've been performing, but it really doesn't matter. I would get out. Now, I'm not suggesting leave today. I am suggesting get time, get some space and time to get a resume together and so on. But we feel we need to help people understand how to think about the decision because, unfortunately, there are more angry and demeaning bosses than we would like. And so this is going to touch a lot of people. And we don't want to just say, hey, just cope and perform because we think all things being equal, life is too short to spend all other things being equal, more time with an angry and demeaning boss. Of course, all of the things are not always equal. They never are. But look, any decision taken too fast in a situation like this is probably not good. If you're not coping and you're not performing, you may not get to make the decision. The decision is going to be taken out of our hands. So what we recommend is coping and performing to give ourselves time and breathing space so we can keep our job decision ours by, of course, keeping our job to begin with. Look, working for an angry boss is a toxic sentence. It's unnecessary for most of us, although sometimes you're going to have to do it for some period of time. It is not a rite of passage. It is not a badge of honor. You don't have to do it to prove to everybody else you can. You'll probably run into it at some point in your career, but you don't need to go looking for it, that's for sure. And staying longer doesn't inherently, just simply staying, doesn't have any value at all.
Right. But the decision is, as it always is, whether to stay or go. You know, one of the choices is not, hey, your boss is going to change, so I guess I'll stay, right? The decision
I think you just touched on the biggest mistake that younger people make is my boss is going to change. He'll get used to me. We'll reach a rapport and so on. No,
it ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, you got to recognize the situation for what it is, and it can be what it is, and you can have an angry and demeaning boss and choose to stay. That's okay. But you got to make a decision whether you're going to stay or go.
Yeah. 7 years I had an angry and demeaning boss. It's simple. The question is always the same, and we want to make that question clear. Do I deliver more value to others in this job than in some other job? And do I get more professionally and personally out of this job than some other job? In the case of working for an angry and demeaning boss, I get less out of it professionally and personally because of how hard it is on me and then by extension on my family if I have one. Okay. But you've got to ask yourself, how much value are you delivering? How much growth are you getting? And then are you being drained in order to do that? If you can find a better job, one that allows you to deliver more value, and we assume that if you're delivering more value to the marketplace, not micro efficient, but in general macro efficient, you'll be making more money. If you can find a better job, go. And if you can't, continue to cope and perform and keep looking until you can.
Okay, so give me a framework though for evaluating that decision. What do I look at?
I got to tell you, these last two bullets about relative growth and emotional toll, and also track record. Actually, two of the last three bullets are so important. We did not put them at the end of the cast to bury them. We put them because they come at the end of the process of becoming effective working for an angry or demeaning boss. But the first one is we want to compare our relative growth during this time versus the emotional toll we're going through. when you work for a toxic boss, an angry boss in this case, we have to consider something we don't consider with other jobs, which is the emotional toll. Okay? Some of us are more susceptible to feeling beaten up, and we take our frustrations home and we reduce the quality of our family life. And some of us simply say, you know, guy doesn't have a gun, I'm fine, right? He doesn't bother me. He looks like an idiot. I think he's an idiot. He behaves like an idiot. And that's not me.
Well, neither of those is right or wrong, frankly, but...
No, it's not. Either one is completely reasonable self-assess, right? I mean, it's...
But you said it there. There's a self-assessment going on. So it doesn't matter which path you choose, but you damn well better know which one you are and stop kidding yourself about being the latter while acting like the former.
Yeah, exactly. If you think you're a tough guy, if you think you're tough and then you're not, that is draining you fast, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's okay to say, this sucks. I'll take a cut in pay to avoid speaking to my son the way I just did, the way my boss did to me earlier today, because I carried that home with me. I don't care who you are. If you're not clear about where you are on that emotional spectrum of how much toll it's taking on you, that'll happen to you. And if it happens a lot, sit up and take notice. And that's why we recommend the coping and performing first, so that when you're ready to decide, when you recognize you've got enough data, you've got a good, your resume is still okay, and you've given yourself space to make a surge. But it's important, though, if all we look at is emotional toll, none of us would stay very long in a role like this, except, unfortunately, the people who can probably least handle it, but need their employment desperately. The key here is to ask, okay, if I'm going to put up with this level of, okay, it's a crap, right? What am I going to get out of it? Can I stand this if I get the big promotion? Can I do this for 6 more months to help my spouse finish his degree or my wife have her baby with her longtime family doctor? You know, you've got to compare your growth in this time versus the emotional toll and compare it to other jobs that you've experienced. And if this is your first job, then that's a very hard thing to do. The likely carrot to your boss's stick is we suggest you consider, is this job so much better in terms of relative career growth that it's worth it? Do I get more out of it career-wise than I have to pay for in emotional distress? And in my experience, this is my experience, I'm not saying it's everybody's, in my experience, too many people mistakenly believe that it will. And I would say only 20%, if that high, of the jobs working for an anger intervening boss give you something career-wise significant enough to justify the emotional toll it takes on many, many people. Unless you're way at the extreme and you're emotionally so mature and so confident, often because of deep spiritual beliefs, that you can handle it and it doesn't, you're unaffected in general.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing is that there is a really simple question, one question you can ask that will really help you to do that comparison of your relative growth versus the emotional toll. Because one thing we have to assume in this thing is, okay, what am I going to get if I stick around? How am I going to grow? And what will that emotional toll be? But there's a question you can ask of your boss that will help answer that. What is that?
Yeah, the question is, what's his track record or what's her track record? How well has this angry boss done historically in getting his directs promoted? Every single boss has a track record about whether or not they get people promoted. Many of our longtime listeners know that you, Mike, were really, really good. You were known for doing a brilliant job of getting your folks promoted as an executive. And look, you can figure this out if you ask or look around a bit. You can. Don't be silly. If everyone who used to work for this guy or this lady left, and there's no evidence they advanced in the industry, that it's not seen as a rite of passage at your company or in the industry or whatever else, you are not going to be the lone exception. That person uses people, and you need to get out.
Yeah, it's really simple, right? There's no proof whatsoever that putting up with the pain is going to have any reward at the end.
So there's none. Exactly right. Yeah. None. Now, if there's proof that there are rewards that people who work for this guy, because he produces outsized results, usually that's the case, that these people get promoted or they're perceived as now being part of the firm or whatever, fine. That's proof. But just the emotional toll, just the stress, just the misery, that's not proof in and of itself. So maybe you can take it if you look around and see that a lot of people a couple of levels above him all ended up working for him. It happens.
Right. In the show notes that we work from, you had that question laid out. You had asterisk next to it. Why? Yeah. And people can't see the asterisk. I'll just ask you, like, why do you have asterisk next to that?
Yeah, I almost never use asterisk. Look, you could have learned about your angry boss's track record long before you took this job. If you were joining the firm, or if you were interviewed, if you were offered the job, you could have asked around in your network. Okay? If you're already at the firm, you could ask a few questions, look around. Look, think of it this way. If someone interviews you after they've made you the offer, not before, please not before, you could ask, what is the ongoing track record of your former directs? Where are they now? This is one of the most unasked post-offer questions ever. And it is one of our five favorite questions to ask after you have an offer. Because if, in fact, you're getting promoted into this job, or they're talking about, they're dangling the idea of future jobs, the question is really simple. What's the likelihood, based on past performance, that this person, male or female, will, in fact, help me get promoted? And the fact is, people don't ask. They think it's not appropriate to ask. It's absolutely inappropriate to ask when you don't have an offer. But once you have the offer, it's absolutely reasonable. This is part of your career. Hey, where are your former directs now? And if the guy says, I don't know, honestly, a lot of them leave. You're like, okay. And I bet you that will be an aha moment for him or her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate that maybe 1% of the people out there ask that question. If that. But it is powerful, no doubt about it.
Yep. So the question is, what is the ongoing track record of your former directs? And again, if you don't feel you can ask that of him or her, and by the way, you ask that before you know if they're angry or demeaning or not, right? So at least you have that data before you come in and then discover that, ooh, before when I was interviewing, he was marketing me, but now I'm in operations and it's different. Suddenly I realize things aren't so nice. If you know it before, it helps you cope and perform. And it helps you know what your timeline is going to be about whether or not you want to stay or you want to get out.
Yeah. Well, that's why I tried very hard to get my folks promoted. I figured I could be my angry, mean self more often.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I heard from them. Yeah. Okay. And we have a couple more things to cover, right?
Right. Yeah. One of them is continue spouse input. Hopefully this is obvious, but you know, keep talking to your spouse and keep listening.
Right.
The move is always, always harder on the spouse.
Yeah, I don't think people understand this. Husband and wife, two significant others, if you decide to make a move in your career and your spouse follows, male to female, female to male, doesn't matter. This is not a gender comment. The move is always harder on the following spouse.
And you can't make it so it's harder on you than it's harder on her or him.
Yep.
But folks, continue to get spouse input. Talk, listen, lobby the team, folks, or your team will fray.
Yeah. And when you're starting that new job, you're going to find that your spouse is at the end of their rope just when you need a bunch of new rope. And that's not a good situation. And folks, male or female, if your spouse doesn't work or works in a much less significant job that contributes much less of the income for your family and for your expenses, for your needs, don't assume that it's easier for them because they've taken a lesser role. It's not that way. It's always harder on the spouse that follows. Even if your spouse makes more money than you and they make a move for you, it's always harder on them, period.
At the end, when you decide, regardless of what you do and how you escape the situation, you don't get to lord this over your old boss.
Ooh,
you don't get to show him or her, yeah, I showed you. Regardless, you're either going to leave quietly or you're going to get promoted quietly.
I've seen this go wrong for people. They handle it really, really well. And then they wanted to have a last final meeting with the boss and tell them what they really thought. And look, we understand that the desire and all we're going to tell you is it's a selfish thing. It's based on other people. It's based on revenge. And it's not professional. No celebrating. If you leave, maybe privately with your spouse, certainly. No celebrating a promotion, making a big deal out of it, or letting slip when you've had a couple of beers and Friday, finally done working for that jerk. No angry recriminations. No telling them what you really thought. You know, they cannot hear it. The moment you leave, the moment you get promoted, you're not part of them anymore.
And folks, this extends to your exit interview, if you're so lucky to have one
with HR. Oh, good, yeah.
You know, exit interview, HR, this is not the time to dump on HR all your old feelings about your boss. It will do absolutely no good and potentially do you a lot of harm.
Yeah, the closest you can ever get to a comment in an exit interview is somebody said, you know, Joe is certainly demanding. And you just raise your eyebrows and say, he certainly is. And if they say, would you care to comment? And you might pause for a moment and then say, I think it would be inappropriate for me to comment at this time. And just let that pause hang there and look them right in the eyes and say, you and I both know what the heck's going on. It's your job to change it. You're not doing it. And I'm not going to be the person who's known for ratting him out because I don't have the power to change it. And unfortunately, folks, watch your back because you still have one. The road of your career is long. And the underlying theme of this show is stay frosty, even at the end.
There you go. So that was a long one. Why don't you sum up for us real quick? Where did we start this conversation?
It was 6 months ago, I think. It was okay, look, this is the start of a series of casts about bad bosses. The first one is obviously the one that gets the most press, the angry and demeaning boss. We talked about our bad boss basics that always apply with any boss. And then we talked about the fundamental premise of this show, which were cope with that angry boss. We gave some things to help you get more time and emotional space, things to perform to be more effective in working with your boss. Not that those things aren't good with any boss, but we tried to highlight the things that were key for angry and demeaning bosses. And then lastly, we tried to give you some guidance on how to decide whether you want to stay or go in this particular situation. Cope, perform, and decide. That's how you can handle one or perhaps even more than one angry and demeaning bosses in a long and successful professional career.
Good. This is going to be a good career tool because you're going to come back to this over the next 20 or 30 years and want to revisit this. Unfortunately, you're very fortunate if you only work for one bad boss your entire career.
Yeah. I don't recommend it for 7 years, but if you have to, if the job's good enough, this cast will help you get through it.
Good enough. All right. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, partner.
We'll see you. That's it, everyone, and that's all you got to know about dealing with the angry and demeaning boss. Next week, I promise you, we'll get on to a different topic. In the meantime, we'll see you all in the discussion forums, www.managertools.com/forums. We'll see you there. So long, everyone, and have a great week.